And I won't. I'll just sit here and be quiet, just in case they do suspect me. They're probably watching me. Well, let them. Let them see what kind of a person I am. I'm not even going to swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Terrible Tommy here at the bunker. At the new bunker. How about that? Yeah, man, I'll tell you. Lone Wolf Radio calling. Lone Wolf Radio calling. And it is, what the hell, where's my Frank Silva clock here? Well, it's April the 3rd, 2017, and we're ready to go. Nice day here. Sun's out. Flowers are blooming. Birds are singing. Street people are crawling. Yeah, and that entry was dedicated to my friend Craig Cobb, who's got a big write-up in the SPLC's Hate Watch. But when I go on there to try to comment, they say, Terrible Tommy, you've been banned from Hate Watch. How do you get banned from a website that's exposing horrible racists like me? You would think they would be thrilled, but I think they're a little afraid that they get such a lot of people writing in or calling in or posting that they think old Terrible Tommy just might influence a few of them to think a little differently. That's Morris, and that's a great compliment to me. I feel very complimented, Morris. By the way, when you gonna die? I commented to someone else, one of our associates, that Craig is one of the reasons, along with people like David Duke, and I know he's educated, he's a doctor and all that shit, one of the reasons why the right wing just can't, the white wing racists can't get anywhere, is stuff like this. Now, I think that Craig taking this church and turning it into a creator church, that's okay. But it's just the way he handles things. Somebody burned his church down. Well, I'm waiting to hear of a bunch of other churches up there being burnt down, because obviously whoever burnt down Craig's church doesn't like churches, so he'll probably keep burning churches down. We'll have to see. So if you got a church, you better insure the shit out of it. I think I told you that the guys over at that other town where Craig gave me a lot over there, and I paid last year the fees, the taxes on it, which was about $50. Just to say we had it. Well, the guy, that one horse town where there's only about 17 people living, the main guy over there, the mayor, instituted new laws and new rules on taxes, and they sent me a bill for $780 taxes for 1 year. Well, of course, that's ridiculous. The lot was only $100, nothing on it, you know. So he's being funny, totally unconstitutional. For these people that want to protect people's constitutional rights from the Nazis, they don't seem very constitutional to me to phony up. They sound like the enemies. They sound like the people they're out to get. So I'm not going to play their silly little game. Of course I wouldn't pay them $700 blackmail for a little lot up there, but it shows to go you what extremes your enemies will go to stop your constitutional rights, so-called. But you don't have any rights. I keep telling you that. Don't you get it? There is no such thing as a right, something that guarantees you something. There are no guarantees, period, in life or any place in this world. You can have whatever you have the strength and will to hold. Nothing else. Amazing, the thousands of people you see on TV and the radio always talking about their rights. I got my rights. You don't have rights. If the ruling class decides to give you some privileges, they do. And if they don't decide to give you privileges, they don't. Because they're only going to give you privileges if it benefits them. That's the name of the game. Power, baby. And if you don't understand that, you better read a little Nietzsche and other works like that. Like the Might is Right book by... That would be a good one for you to read. I just hope poor old Craig Cobb doesn't get himself into a real jam one of these days, because they're laying for him. They're laying for him. You know, I ran that audio about the Odin's boys up there in Toronto fighting the Untermenschen yesterday, and maybe the day before, maybe now, I don't know, but it's a waste of time, really, to fight with these guys on the street, because they have no power. You have no power. They have no power. So what's that all about? If you could guarantee getting power by having fistfights in the street, like we used to do, that would be okay. But it never goes anywhere. It never goes anywhere. I remember when the Heritage Front was going strong up there in Toronto, and I visited them a couple of times, at least once. And they had a pretty good organization going there, but every organization becomes infiltrated. And a guy by the name of Grant Bristow was working for the Royal Mounted Police the whole time. He was the best good talker for the Heritage Front. That's what they do. They send in somebody really good, and you think he's going to really get you over the top, and he turns out to be an informant. He was paid a lot of money, and once he came out in the public that he was a snitch, he took all that money and went out across town and built him a big house, bought him a big $200,000 or $300,000 house, and lives happily ever after. So that's the problem with when you try to start an organization with members. They always get infiltrated or fall apart from infighting. That's the biggest problem, is the infighting. I discovered that boy is a Jew. No, you're a Jew. Well, I hear you're a homosexual. No, you're a homosexual. Well, I'm getting out of here. That's my son John and I used to laugh about it, all these guys calling each other homosexuals. And I used to say, well, how did he know he's a homosexual? Did he sleep with him? How would you know someone's a homosexual for sure unless you slept with them or something? That usually shut people up. You know, the thing that upsets me the most is that the Republicans are just as crooked as bastards as the Democrats, and in some cases even more. Take, for instance, voter fraud that Trump was yelling and screaming about, the voter fraud, which my research says that there was very little of that going on, except by the Republicans. And Greg Palast, who's a muckraking reporter, who is obviously a progressive left-winger, but he does research and find some good things, especially about the oil in the Middle East and all that. Well, to show you, you see, the Republicans are cowards. They won't come out and like we do and say, well, yeah, we're white racist separatists, but we're not involved in criminal, quasi-criminal activities to screw people. Like the other side, like the Republicans. And trouble is, so many white people say, well, we got nothing else, we'll stick with the Republican Party. Listen to a little of this film a trailer that Palace has put out. And see what I mean.
My name's Greg Palace. I'm an investigative reporter. And every 4 years, I become a crime reporter. The crime, election theft.
Why are these such secret lists?
This is a list I'm not supposed to have, and you're not supposed to see. It's a list of 7,200,000 voters. If your name's on this secret list, your ballot can get canceled legally. Why? Because you've been accused of voting twice.
This voting system is out of control. You have people, in my opinion, that are voting many, many times.
Voting many times, Donald? You claim millions of Americans commit voter fraud? That's how they plan to steal this election. The trick is called cross-check, and it's ethnically cleansing the voter rolls of 29 states. Here's our file on the Wizard of Crosscheck, Chris Kobach. He's the top election official in Kansas, Republican superstar.
Mr. Kobach?
Hi.
You're the guy behind the cross-check list.
So how would cross-check steal an election? Well, check out the names on the list. Hernandez, Wong, and nearly 250,000 Jacksons. In other words, voters of color.
This is voter suppression. Pure and simple.
Want to know who's behind this ugly business? A small circle of men. Paul Singer, the Vulture. The Vulture made his biggest killing ever by preying on Detroit and chewing on this, the corpse of the auto industry when it collapsed in 2009. John Paulson, known as JP, the foreclosure king, and the brothers Koch. David and Charles Koch Fund, the Heritage Foundation, which promotes the mass purge of voter rolls.
And the Heritage Foundation's latest crusade, Kansas Interstate Crosscheck.
We got like a 2-week notice. They just said, well, we're closing the doors.
The pain runs so deep when you have to wake up every day wondering, is they going to try to take my house away? I mean, what's next?
If they're going to take away your job and take away your home, they'd better take away your vote.
Well, a lot of you people out there are going to say, God damn, that Metzger's gone crazy. He's become a flaming Marxist. Because Greg Palace is a race mixer. Yeah, and he doesn't like us, that's for sure. But there's a difference between straight honesty and crooks. And this Republican Party, even though it may look like they're engineering it towards the white race, in reality, they're going to take it away from us and everybody else. They're going to screw everybody else because it's big business. Why do you think the billionaires are behind the voting situation? Now, as far as I'm concerned, voting's a pain in the ass, and I haven't done it for years, and not going to do it because it's a game. It's a cruel game, and the two major parties have got it fixed, so they just toss the ball back and forth to each other and call each other names and attack each other and then they play the game. But like under Obama, he did all kinds of really bad crap that supposedly he was going to straighten it all out. He spent billions and billions and billions of dollars wasted money. But Trump will do the same thing. The game never changes. It's might is right for the rich people, the capitalists. And so when people like Greg Palast, who is a left-wing progressive or muckraker, comes out with some stuff that seems to benefit the non-whites, you better read it over and see when's it going to affect the whites. They've been screwing the white working class for a long time. And so you have to go where the action is and read and research this stuff. If you don't, you're going to be stuck like the Dukeites in this so-called right-wing racist struggle without really knowing what's going on and being used by people who are supposed to be your people. If you're going to play at the idea of democratic society and voting, if you're going to put that out there, then you better do it honestly, which they don't do, and that's this voter suppression. But it's easy for Trump and all these other people to say, see what they're doing, see what they're doing, and not really checking it out. Here's an example of how the capitalistas are raping the world, not only the United States, but the world. Not for you and me, white working people. It's for the elite, the cream of the crop, the guys at the top, the 1-2 percenters that control most of the wealth in this country. So here's another example why you have to look around for information, you know? Okay.
In Screwed News, after reveling in their team's performance at the World Cup, Argentinians are now facing an ongoing and financial nightmare. Last week, Standard & Poor's ruled that Argentina had officially defaulted on its debt, marking its second default on its debt in just over 10 years. What was once one of South America's most promising economies has gone through economic crisis after crisis in recent years, leaving millions of Argentinians in deep poverty and an economy in turmoil. As for this most recent crisis, it all stems from hustlers and banksters taking advantage of that nation's financial meltdown in 2001. In order to get out of that collapse, Argentina was forced to borrow a staggering $132 billion. It then defaulted on some of that debt when it couldn't afford to pay back the interest on those billions. In an effort to try to stay solvent and keep their country going, Argentina asked its bondholders and investors to trade in their bonds for cheaper ones, and most of the bondholders went along with that plan. However, a group of Wall Street millionaire and billionaire hedge funders said no to that plan and sued Argentina over its refusal to pay back the original interest. One of those billionaire hedge funders is top GOP funder Paul Singer, a man many call the Vulture, and a man who, according to BBC reporter and author Greg Palast, is almost single-handedly responsible for Argentina's latest default. Joining me for now for more on Paul the Vulture Singer and his role in this latest Argentinian financial collapse is Greg Palast himself, investigative reporter with BBC News and The Guardian, and author of the book Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. Greg, welcome back.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you with us. So what is the situation in Argentina right now?
Well, it's Republicans versus Democrats, and I don't mean Argentine Republicans and Democrats. You have really hidden in this story about Argentina, which is all over the papers, like, why do we care about Argentina other than World Cup? You know, they blew it, that's it. The answer is that, in fact, what's happening in Argentina may determine the United States presidential election in 2016 because of the players and what's on the table, which most Americans don't understand. Attacking Argentina is the number one New York donor to the Republican Party and the most influential donor, Paul the Vulture Singer. I didn't give him the name the Vulture. I think his mother did, but certainly he's known as the Vulture by bankers because he's a guy who attacks the weak and the dying. I've hunted this guy, from the Congo to Peru to Argentina for The Guardian and others. And he waits in ambush. In the case of Argentina, taking some very bad advice from the IMF, decided that it could only survive by defaulting. This was about 15 years ago. It restructured its debts. This cost the United States taxpayer at the time a pretty penny to resolve Argentina's debts, or so we thought. So you and I, through the IMF, 50% of the IMF's debts belong to the United States. We helped restore Argentina, which became actually a very strong economy, until this latest attack by Singer, who said, wait a minute, 15 years ago, those bonds you defaulted, I kept 3% of them. And now I want you to pay me. Are you ready for this, Tom? He paid about $30 million. He wants $3 billion. That's 100 times what he pays. He's not asking Argentina to pay off old debts. Argentina said, we will pay you what the face value of the bonds. Everyone else took short money. We'll give you 100%. That's not good enough for Singer. He wants 100 times what he paid. If that happens, Argentina goes down, but so do the big banks out of New York, Citibank, J.P. Morgan, and in Europe, the United Bank of Switzerland, which put together the original deal. Those banks will then, if Argentina goes into default, those banks end up in huge financial trouble. He has sued. So the billionaire Republican hotshot, Paul Singer, the vulture, has not only sued Argentina, he has sued J.P. Morgan, Citibank, United Bank of Switzerland, and said, whatever money Argentina gave you over the years, baby, that's mine. And those banks, and by the way, he's actually stopped Argentina. He got a court order which prevents Argentina from paying off its debts unless he gets his pound, or in his case, his ton of flesh.
What possible legal rationale does he have for this?
It's a berserko, a complete berserko legal rationale. By the way, I want you to know that the reason Paul Singer's gone into a U.S. court, that's because, after some of my reports, he is barred from using any court in Britain or the Commonwealth. He's barred from China. He's barred from Europe. So he goes into U.S. court and finds an old Nixon appointee, 84 years old, okay? And I'm going to be straight about it. The Constitution doesn't allow us to retire these brain melts. And talks this guy, the legal theory is that no bondholder can be paid unless everyone's paid. Fine. Argentina's offered the same deal to the vulture as every other bank, including 100% payoff. He won't accept it, and he's been able to actually stop payments to the rest of the world's big banks. This is a problem for you and me. Whether we like it or not, we have bailed out these banks. We uphold their reserves. If Argentina goes down, their reserves are in real trouble, these big central banks, and it breaks up it attacks all deals, whether it's Argentina, whether the deal we just had in Greece. He's going after Spain now. He took $165 million out of the Greek treasury when they were bankrupt. And he even took, and this is a story I did, he took away the money we sent to the Congo Republic to clean the water systems to end a cholera epidemic. He took that money for some old Civil War debts from, like, that no one even knows if they're legit. But he basically took the foreign aid money we gave to the Congo Republic to cure a cholera epidemic. He's a really sweet guy. This is the guy, and again, I want to emphasize, and this is not small, he's a crucial Republican donor, and the big banks, of course, have been backing Obama and Clinton. So you see here, not only a difference in donors, but a difference in philosophy. The big banks think that government does ultimately have some role in controlling the financial system.
Greg,
banning these outlaws.
There's a conspiracy theory, shall we say, among some in Democratic circles, that the Republicans, one of the reasons that they've been obstructing so many efforts by President Obama to put the economy back together, extend long-term unemployment, rebuild roads, anything that might stimulate the economy, is because they actually want the economy to crash, because there's two more years left in the Obama presidency, and they want it to look like Herbert Hoover's last 2 years, so that they can have an entire generation of Republicans the way that Herbert Hoover led to a generation of Democrats. I'm curious your thoughts on that conspiracy theory, and B, could Singer taking down big American banks with this lawsuit be the tip of the spear of that? You wrote, in Europe, Singer's a financial outlaw, but in the USA, he's a job creator. It seems...
Let's go beyond to the facts of one of the things he's done. One, he's had another target, which is the United States Treasury. Hmm. He's demanding $3 billion of Argentina. You should know that he and his partners took $12 billion from the U.S. Treasury during the auto bailout. He silently, secretly, and through some flim-flam, got a hold of the GM auto parts division and said he would shut down the auto parts operation. GM was already in bankruptcy. GM would have been liquidated. We'd have lost 100,000 jobs easy. 100,000 jobs, unless he got $12 billion. He got the check because GM said they couldn't operate for another 24 hours without those parts. He literally cut off GM's parts and got 12.
So we just have 20 seconds left, Greg. You think he could take down the banks and cause a big crash?
He would love it. He calls it creative destruction. I see a lot of destruction, not the creation. Yeah. This is 2016 being played out in another continent.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. Greg.
Well, boys and girls, you've got to follow the money. You've got to follow the money, and you're going to find that at the top, they're all crooks. Virtually all crooks. I don't think an honest person could survive in Washington or Wall Street or any place in high finance. It is the elite 1-2%. Most of them are still white, controlling the money. So they have to create a smokescreen using other excuses, of which some of those excuses you buy, and it sounds good when somebody like Trump talks about them, or even a Democrat. But in reality, there's something that's going nowhere and not going to solve any of the problems, and it's going to continue like that. So unless you look at the Washington as a one big mafia, organized crime, two gangs, Republican and Democrat, unless you look at it that way, you can't help or can't hope to help the race. Now, Palast has put out a film called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, A Tale of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. If you get a chance to see that film, I think it'd be well worth your while. And like I say, you got to look at it intelligently, any of these films, or listen to these radio shows like this one you just heard, because you need to cut out the bad crap, I mean the really bad crap, and listen to the good stuff. Listen to the good stuff, the facts, the figures. Well, I see this morning in the news that the Republicans are working 24 hours a day to get a good health bill and get a good health plan. Bullshit. They're just figuring out how they can keep the big insurance companies going at the their benefit instead of the working people of this country. And it's sad because Obama supposedly was helping all these poor people. Well, Obamacare didn't help the poor working people, but it did really damage the middle class. And, of course, a large percentage of those were white. But whenever they say they're going to straighten something out and do something good for you, don't pay attention to them. It's all bullshit. Don't forget that. You ever wonder where a lot of the money that's supposed to go to the downtrodden Mongol Indians and people like that go? Well, here's a story. A consultant, this is Cleveland, a consultant to one of the leaders of the anti-Chief Wahoo movement stole more than $183,000 in federal grants designed to help Mongol Americans in the Northeast Ohio, federal investigators say. Acting U.S. Attorney David Sierja charged Craig McGuire, doesn't sound like a Mongol name to me, 47, of suburban Columbus, today via a criminal information, which usually means the defendant is cooperating with the investigation. This case is worth talking about because the investigation, which Sierja said is ongoing, is really about a Cleveland man named Robert Roche, a well-known Native American Mongol who received wide attention for his opposition to the Cleveland Indians Chief Wahoo logo. I'm not going to go on with this because it's typical. White guys claiming to be Indians, white guys claiming to be Mongols. They show a picture of the guy. Wait a minute, yeah. These so-called Mongols, most of them are as white as you and I. is another scam. The Mongol Indians scam the government. The government scams the Indians. Everybody's scamming, you know, just like, what's his name says, the Pope of my church. Yeah. Okay, where are we at here? Multiply this kind of corruption 1,000 times and you'll have the USA, or 10,000 times. Not just one or two here and there. It's everywhere. Every government in the state, and the government in Washington, they're all of them corrupt. Corrupt. Here's a letter to Liberty Bell back in 1982. Yeah. You must know the kind of slop that passes for history in America. I doubt one American in 100 could even name the countries of Eastern Europe, let alone expound on what their politics were before World War II. All we can do is plug away and try to educate people. In that regard, perhaps the following would help to clear up a common misconception I have noticed among our readers. I have heard people a number of times saying, "Oh, if Hitler had only treated the Russian people decently and enlisted their aid in the war against communism. Instead, he treated the Russians as subhumans and drove them into Stalin's arms," unquote. Well, there's a lot more to it than that. The Jews knew Russia was ripe for a revolt against communism and, with the evil sneakiness of their kind, took several steps to prevent such a German-Russian anti-communist alliance from coming to pass. First, the commissars, largely Jewish, were attached to every combat unit to spy on and control the soldiers and ensure their loyalty, unquote. These commissars had summary power to inflict the death penalty. Backing up the commissars were entire divisions of the NKVD troops, who virtually formed a second front in many areas to force the frontline units to fight. Hitler ordered these commissars, who were not Red Army but civilian police, to be shot if captured. Second, every army destroys communication and useful supplies when it retreats, but the communist actions went far beyond this. Their stated purpose was to destroy the means of survival of the population under German control. They were to be thrown starving, freezing, and unemployed into the overstrained German supply system. The Germans would have to divert military transport to support the people, or else let them perish. The purpose was not only to weaken the Germans, but to cause the people to blame their distress on the Germans. The Jews soon found that it was very hard to get the Russians to destroy their own nation and people, left some 20 regiments of special troops officered by Jews were set up for the specific purpose. All this before World War II broke out. During the war, peasants often defended their vital food supplies with their lives, and thousands were killed over this issue. Another atrocity was the mining of the cities and their destruction, regardless of the lives of the inhabitants. In Kiev, hundreds of Germans and thousands of Russians were killed in these demolitions, all of which were blamed on the Germans by the Jews. Third, a deliberate policy of violating the laws of war were embarked upon from the start. There was no Red Cross, no Geneva Convention. Prisoners were usually murdered, often hideously tortured. The purpose was to get the Germans to retaliate in kind and thus discourage Russians from surrendering to them. Fourth and worst of all was the deliberate creation of a partisan guerrilla warfare. The Jews had tried out this trick early on the French in the 1870 war. Cadres of soldiers were deliberately left behind in the retreat to pose as civilians and carry on this secret warfare. Soldiers lost from their units and civilians were required to join partisan units. Failure to do so could be punishable by death for a civilian, while surrender for a soldier was also a capital offense. Partisan units were aided by line crossers and paratroops, and often supplied by air. The communists never expected much actual military power from partisan units. Their purpose was to commit atrocities against the rear areas of the German troops and to draw reprisals upon the population. This was to prevent the civilians from settling down under German occupation and form exactly the anti-communist alliance the Jews feared. In addition to all this was the hysterical hate propaganda designed to turn the people against the Nazis, propaganda which still continues today unabated. There was also the circumstance which nothing could alter, that the Germans were the foreign invader of the nation, which hardly endeared them to the Russian people. The amazing thing is that despite all this, so many people did revolt against the Jew communists. On the first day of the war, two entire Red Army divisions went over to the Germans en masse. Millions of other Russians surrendered individually to the Germans as a protest against communism. Stalin ordered thousands of executions to try and stop the rot. Things got so bad that even the army group commanders went over to the enemy, like General Vlasov did. When an army group commander was killed in 1942, Stalin refused to believe it, saying that he had gone over to the Germans. The number of Russians who served with the German army was in the millions, including my own stepfather who served with Vaslov. Millions more served as auxiliary troops, while countless others were involved in the struggle against communist partisans. There could be no neutrals in the struggle. As in Vietnam, if civilians did not arm to fight the Reds or have military protection, they had no choice but to serve the Reds. This is the real truth behind the anti-communist struggle in Russia. I hope that people reading this will realize that there is much more to the question than Hitler's whims or alleged racial theories. And that's the end of that letter. Pretty good, huh? Well, that's it for today. We're a little short, but I think it's well worthwhile. So I'll see you tomorrow. Yeah.
Talk about details like this. Suppose you put your right hand in the Bible, you raise your left hand. Would that count? Or would God say, sorry, wrong hand, try again?
Here's another one of these civic customs. Swearing on the Bible. You understand that shit? They tell you to raise your right hand, place your left hand on the Bible. Does this stuff really matter? Which hand? Does God really give a fuck about details like this? Suppose you put your right hand in the Bible, you raise your left hand. Would that count? Or would God say, sorry, wrong hand, try again? And why does one hand have to be raised? What is the magic in this gesture? This seems like some sort of a primitive voodoo mojo shtick. Why not put your left hand on the Bible, let your right hand hang down by your side? It's more natural. Or put it in your pocket. Remember what your mother used to say? Don't put your hands in your pockets. Does she know something we don't know? Is this hand shit really important? Well, let's get back to the Bible, America's favorite national theatrical prop. Suppose the Bible they hand you to swear on is upside down, or backward, or both, and you swear to tell the truth on an upside down backward Bible. Would that count? Suppose the Bible they hand you is an old Bible and half the pages are missing. Suppose all they have is a Chinese Bible in an American court, or a Braille Bible and you're not blind. Suppose they hand you an upside down backward Chinese Braille Bible with half the pages missing. At what point does all of this stuff just break down and become just a lot of stupid shit that somebody made up? They fucking made it up, folks. It's make-believe. It's make-believe. Now, all right. Okay. Let's leave the Bible aside. We'll get back to the science fiction reading later. The more important question is, what is the big deal about swearing to God in the first place? Why does swearing to God mean you're going to tell the truth? Wouldn't affect me. If they said to me, you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God, I'd say, yeah. I'll tell you about as much truth as the people who wrote that fucking Bible. How do you like that? Huh? Swearing on the Bible doesn't mean anything. It's kid. Swearing to God is kid stuff. Did you know, you ever, remember when you were a kid, if you told another kid something he didn't quite believe, he'd say, you swear to God? I would always say, yeah, I swear to God, even if I was lying. Why not? What's going to happen if I lie? Nothing. Nothing happens if you lie, unless you get caught, and that's a whole different story. Sometimes a kid would think he was being slick with me, and he'd say, you swear on your mother's grave? I'd say, yeah. Why not? First of all, my mother was alive. She didn't even have a grave. Second of all, even if she was dead, what's she going to do? Rise from the grave and come and haunt me? Come and haunt me? All because I told a lie to an 8-year-old? Get fucking real, will you? Sometimes I would say, I swear on my mother's tits. Kids are impressed with things like that. I mean, I don't care about my mother's tits either. I don't care if they fell off. Fuck her. Not my problem. They're your tits, Ma. You keep an eye on them. Swearing to God doesn't mean anything. Swearing on the Bible doesn't mean anything. You know why? Because Bible or no Bible, God or no God, if it suits their purposes, people are going to lie in court. The police do it all the time. All the time. Yes, they do. It's part of their job to protect, to serve, and to commit perjury whenever it supports the state's case. Swearing on the Bible is just one more way of controlling people and keeping them in line. And it's one of these superstitious things that holds us back as a species. Here's one more item for you, the last in our civics book. Rights. Boy, everyone in this country is always running around yammering about their fucking rights. I have a right. You have no right. We have a right. They don't have a right. Folks, I hate to spoil your fun, but there's no such thing as rights, okay? They're imaginary. We made them up, like the boogeyman. The three little pigs, Pinocchio, Mother Goose, shit like that. Rights are an idea. They're just imaginary. They're a cute idea. Cute. But that's all. Cute and fictional. But if you think you do have rights, let me ask you this. Where do they come from? People say, well, they come from God. They're God-given rights. Oh, fuck. Here we go again. Here we go again. The God excuse. The last refuge of a man with no answers and no argument. It came from God. Anything we can't describe must have come from God. Personally, folks, I believe that if your rights came from God, he would have given you the right to some food every day, and he would have given you the right to a roof over your head. God would have been looking out for you. God would have been looking out for you. You know that? He wouldn't have been worried about making sure you have a gun so you could get drunk on Sunday night and kill your girlfriend's parents. But let's say it's true. Let's say God gave us these rights. Why would he give us a certain number of rights? The Bill of Rights of this country has 10 stipulations, okay? 10 rights. And apparently God was doing sloppy work that week because we've had to amend the Bill of Rights an additional 17 times. So God forgot a couple of things, like slavery. Just fucking slipped his mind. But let's say God gave us the original 10. He gave the British 13. The British Bill of Rights has 13 stipulations. The Germans have 29. The Belgians have 25. The Swedish have only 6. And some people in the world have no rights at all. What kind of a fucking goddamn God-given deal is that? No rights at all? Why would God give different people in different countries different numbers of different rights? Boredom? Amusement? Bad arithmetic? Do we find out at long last after all this time that God is weak in math skills? Doesn't sound like divine planning to me. Sounds more like human planning. Sounds more like one group trying to control another group. In other words, business as usual in America. Now, if you think you do have rights, one last assignment for you. Next time you're at the computer, get on the internet, go to Wikipedia. When you get to Wikipedia, in the search field for Wikipedia, I want you to type in Japanese Americans 1942, and you'll find out all about your precious fucking rights, okay? All right. You know about it. You know about it. Yeah. In 1942, there were 110,000 Japanese-American citizens in good standing, law-abiding people who were thrown into internment camps simply because their parents were born in the wrong country. That's all they did wrong. They had no right to a lawyer, no right to a fair trial, no right to a jury of their peers, no right to due process of any kind. The only right they had, right this way, into the internment camps. Just when these American citizens needed their rights the most, their government took them away. And rights aren't rights if someone can take them away. They're privileges. That's all we've ever had in this country is a bill of temporary privileges. And if you read the news even badly, you know that every year the list gets shorter and shorter and shorter. You see how sooner or later? Yeah. Sooner or later, the people in this country are going to realize the government does not give a fuck about them. Government doesn't care about you or your children or your rights or your welfare or your safety. It simply doesn't give a fuck about you. It's interested in its own power. That's the only thing, keeping it and expanding it wherever possible. Personally, when it comes to rights, I think one of two things is true. I think either we have unlimited rights or we have no rights at all. Personally, I lean toward unlimited rights. I feel, for instance, I have the right to do anything I please. But if I do something you don't like, I think you have the right to kill me. So where are you going to find a fairer fucking deal than that? So the next time some asshole says, gee, I have a right to my opinion, you say, oh, yeah, well, I have a right to my opinion, and my opinion is you have no right to your opinion. Then shoot the fuck and walk away. Thank you.
And the white man is the boldest creature on this planet. The white man has more nerve than the fucking toothache. That's why you can go to space and do all that shit. You will crawl into a can of beans. I get in. Because I saw a special, you know, early in the morning, like 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning, when you think niggas are asleep, I'm up. They have specials on white men do crazy shit. I saw a white man in a cage deep in the ocean fucking with a big old white shark. That shit was scary. And the shark just kept hitting it. The white man was down there just freaking. They brought him up and shit, interviewed him. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. Marvelous. The shark was white, I was white, there was no niggas I loved. That's some funny, wild-ass bullshit. Because you guys do things that niggas won't do, and the white folks are nosy. They have specials, nosy specials. Why does a bee make honey? You ain't a bee, why do you give a fuck? Following a butterfly to Mexico, just crazy shit. Nosy. That's why you can go to the moon and shit. They tell me they sent a black girl somewhere, didn't they? They said they sent a black girl up there, but I didn't never hear them say they brought that bitch back. Because didn't they send a married couple? I saw them on the news. I ain't seen that black woman. There's a coon on the moon in June. The jig is up. Shit was cold. I hope they bring that bitch back. Because didn't Russia leave somebody up there? They sent somebody up there. They was too broke. They couldn't bring this motherfucker back. Because the country fell apart. The economist, he called it back, Conrad, Conrad. They said, I'm sorry, he's moved. He went to America, Conrad. Some cold shit. But it is. It's. But white people do that. You do wild stuff. That's. And I'm now that we're all friends, and I want to ask white folks, why do you guys take your children to places where they can get attacked and eaten and shit? I'm tired of picking up paper, reading about some little white child carried off by a bear, a mountain lion, some coyotes, wolves. You take your kids. You never read about black kids being taken away by some wild shit. You guys are freaks for doing that shit. And then when the bear gets your kids, you try to get all psychological. What motivated the bear? The bear was hungry. Your child looked like a hamburger. That's what's the motivation. And you shouldn't have been out there in the woods. Y'all are crazy. Let your kids play in the eagle's nest. Play with the eggs. You know the eagle coming back to fuck them up. And every time I go to the zoo, I get mad. Because those are our animals. It pisses me off. Lock up your shit. Lock up a goat. It pisses me off when I see all the lions and zebras, all that pretty African shit. You guys lock them up. And black folks, believe me, they belong to us. They try to disassociate us. They belong to us. Fuck some Ziegfeld and fucking Roy in Vegas and shit. That shit is ours. When I go to the zoo, I get mad. If you don't believe me, take 12 or 10 niggas to the zoo. Watch the animals. When they see that many black people, they get crazy. They think they're going home. They... start jumping up and shit and hopping. And when they see white people, they do like you. They just stare. She was staring. See, I told you I got drunk. I didn't miss shit. She's had two or three white meetings with her boyfriend. I'm just, this is a bit much. Nigger. But I can take it. My ancestors were slaves. You can stare at me all night. I know the deal. Yes. Didn't they stare at us during slavery? It's my job to make white people mad. That's my job. So, nigga, we want you to go to Earth and piss off white folks. Gotcha, St. Peter. But don't worry about it. I'm being punished. I live in a white neighborhood. I'm being punished on that. I am. I got to move. I got to move. They will not go to sleep till I come home. Sometimes I don't come home for a week. They're up in pajamas looking for me. Where is he? You can't make me go to sleep. Where is he? And this is an illusion. I'm not a nigga. This is an illusion. In reality, I'm a wolf. I was bitten by a wild nigga. I'll be fine in the morning.